This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. Washington Wise from Charles Schwab is an original podcast that unpacks the stories making news there. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.
Next up on Off Duty, the Danish invasion.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about food and drink and all things apropos thereof. I'm Beth Cracklauer.
And I'm Kevin Sintemong.
And joining us today is a chef who's had a very big impact on the way a lot of people eat all over the world. He's a co-founder of Noma, the paradigm-shifting restaurant in Copenhagen. His native Denmark knows him as a TV personality, an entrepreneur behind a wide array of restaurants and other food businesses, and a philanthropist. And now he's in New York opening the most ambitious food destination in recent memory. Welcome to the podcast, Klaus Meyer.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've got a number of projects actually launching in New York this year. It's hard to know where to start, but let's start with the one opening this Monday, the Great Northern Food Hall in Grand Central Terminal, all 5,000 square feet of
wow.
It. What are you doing with all that space?
Well, we hope to get some guests in there. They have to have yeah. somewhere to sit also, but we have six pavilions in there. We're baking. We actually installed a huge bakery behind the walls, invented the hall, so we are baking all the danishes, all the pastries, all the whole grain wheat bread twice a day. And they go into, beautiful warm sandwiches packed with cumin roasted lamb breast, sep mushroom mayonnaise, pickled red onions, or pork loin with crackling skin, fermented red cabbage and raw apples, or we also have a brisket one. We have a falafel one. We have flatbreads. So this is kind of in the pavilion called Meyer's Berry that also serves warm egg sandwiches to the commuters in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second pavilion also out in the front is Brownsville Roses. That is our coffee pavilion, coffee, tea, hot chocolate, nice desserts is being served from that one also. Then we have the Open Rye, which is a little temple for open-faced rye sandwich. So everything, on a slice of freshly baked rye bread, beautiful toppings, smoked salmon, tartare, perfectly cooked potatoes with dill mayonnaise, crispy chicken skin. Then we have a smoothie bar. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. We have a salad and smoothie bar, and we have a big cocktail bar also.
Right.
And then we have the grain bar, which is this pavilion that is specialized in granolas and granola puffy in the morning, savory porridges come lunch and dinner, and then the craft beer is popping up at 4 o'clock every day.
Right.
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
Wow. No, that's all.
that sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds like I could spend all day there from breakfast to getting a nightcap. One of the things I'm most excited about is the open face sandwich. But I have a confession to make. I've never been sure how to pronounce the name of it. Is it Smørbrød?
Well, that's pretty close. I mean, you almost sound like a Dane there.
Wow.
Good job.
Amazing.
Kevin.
Thank you.
What did you do that?
So how do you say it?
Smørbrød.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty close. That was pretty close. So in my experience, Danes are really into their smørbrød. Is smørbrød to Denmark what the burger is to Americans?
Yes and no.
It's
an iconic food item like the burger is to America, but it is something that it also has some sort of functionality to it. So it also has a connectivity to the bento box, because in the old days, when the men left the home,
mm-hmm.
they would be working in the field or in some sort of industrial plant of a kind, then they would bring with them in a little box those open-faced sandwiches that you can smear them in the morning and eat them 4 hours later without any problems. But they are very important for our lunch culture in particular.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at the Great Northern Food Hall, as you already said, you're calling them a name that's a little bit easier for American mouths to say, open rye. Are there ways in which not only the name, but the sandwich too has been tweaked at all for the U.S. market? Or altered or Americanized? Or are these as you would serve them in Denmark?
So the ones we've come in with are kind of modern takes on classical Scandinavian open rye combos. But we definitely will, down the road, of course, make a take on something like Thanksgiving. And that would be a tribute to America, obviously. But what you find right now in the open-faced rye case is, you know, kind of iconic Danish combinations.
Right. Now, New Nordic is a term we've heard bandied about a lot in, over the last decade or so. You're widely credited as one of the fathers of this movement. What does that mean to you now, and has that meaning changed over time?
It means to me exactly what I meant when we launched the movement, namely that a chef has to stand up for something larger than just deliciousness and the profits of his last enterprise. Mm-hmm. And that's a responsibility to try to be a role model that, because great chefs are looked upon and copied by other people, so, and when we also have a certain outreach, now you have, you know, invited me into this show. So I think we have to stand up for something important in a time where food systems are collapsing all over the world. Mm-hmm. So for me, New York cuisine, considered as an ideology or philosophy, is very much about the concept of fighting for something larger than your business, and issues sustainability, biodiversity, the idea of bridging healthiness with great taste, the idea of teaming up with other players in the industry to form alliances, to change stuff, to have a change agenda in your life, and not just swim with the stream. When it comes to the food on the plate, the New York regime was and is about very much highlighting and emphasizing the place where you are, trying to transmit the values, the flavors, the sensations from that specific place through the food. And this is why you get a little bit schizophrenic when you come to New York and people expect you to bring the New York cuisine alive there. Mm-hmm. Because what is it then? Is it something that you import with a boat or an airplane, or is it something that you make here? And the way we see it, it's about connecting with the farmers and food producers around us, but then create food where the flavors remind the eater of where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. And I know you've also opened a restaurant and culinary school in Bolivia where you're applying many of these principles and sourcing all of the ingredients very, very locally there and using different ingredients because that is what's available and appropriate there. In a very different climate and environment from Denmark's, would you call the food there Nordic or New Nordic, or what do you call it when you're making in Bolivia or New York?
That's a very good question. So in Bolivia, we absolutely want to get out of the equation. Also because there, it is what I'm trying to do there through the Melting Pot Foundation that I founded in 2010. That was just to see if you could, we are exploring to what extent you can combat poverty with deliciousness. And the whole idea is to try to give away everything we learned during the process of building the New Nordic Cuisine Movement and NOMA. So in Bolivia, we're trying to engage a large number of different stakeholders in the process of releasing the true potential of the Bolivian food system. And then we have created Gusto, a social project, and a fine dining restaurant as a symbol of how far you can take it from a restaurant perspective.
Right.
So we absolutely don't speak about New Nordic down there. We say we think you could be the next great food destination. We are here to help. We want to be an enzyme and intelligent enzymes that get smarter and smarter every week. And we bring in some resources, but you have to make it happen here.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. But the food at the Great Northern Food Hall sounds very Danish, not just modern Danish or New Nordic, but you're also serving very traditional Danish dishes, right?
The open braai, in some capacity, is pretty traditional.
Mm-hmm.
We just make it a little bit nicer. Everything is made in-house. Kind of the balance between meat and vegetables is also recalibrated a little bit. But it is pretty traditional, the open braai. We make a lot of beautiful Danishes the way they should be made with a butter dough and baked totally freshly, several times a day. And that is also very traditional Danish. Only we make the jams ourselves, and that you don't. You don't really do that in many bakeries in Denmark anymore. That you did maybe 100 years ago, but we kind of reverted a little bit to the old ways. So we call it an old world bakery. And then the whole food, in the pavilion deep down in the end of the Vanderbilt Hall, called Almanac. Here we are kind of making a take on the Spanish tapas bar, and there we will be serving a lot of raw food items and also a couple of warm items. But this will all be, you know, really the new Nordic cuisine, and not very classical at all.
You've also opened a full-service restaurant at Grand Central Terminal, Agern, with executive chef Gunnar Gislason, who is from Iceland. And I'm curious to hear about your working relationship with him in terms of how similar or different you've found your cultural conceptions about food to be as a Dane and an Icelander. You know, where are there overlaps, and where do you find yourselves kind of speaking a different language about food?
That's a good perspective. So Gunnar has been one of the pioneers in the Nordic cuisine movement since the very beginning. The Nordic cuisine was never about creating one uniform way of cooking that you could then find in Stockholm and Oslo and Reykjavik and Nuuk in Greenland and Copenhagen. The idea was always to find a way of expressing the very local larder. But that the common features have been the idea of creating a brighter and lighter flavor profile than what you would typically find in French or American food, and then also emphasizing everything wild and everything vegetable. But Gunnar has been growing up in a place with a lot of fish and very few vegetables, so if you smell Gunnar's armpits, they would be smelling cod and seaweed and lobster and Arctic char. So his cuisine is formed very much by the virtues of the ocean and the product from there, and also by the austerity of the soil and climate in Iceland. So he has been capable of bringing out extremely wonderful flavors in something as simple as rutabaga and beetroots and potatoes and parsnips, which are some of the very few vegetables that actually can reach total maturity in the Icelandic climate. Where we in Denmark, where I come from, we have a little bit, our nature resembles very much the nature around New York, so we have a slightly more generous choice or kind of larder to pick from.
Right.
Well, I'm so excited to eat there and to explore the whole Great Northern Food Hall. We'll all be able to do that as of this Monday when the Great Northern Food Hall opens in Grand Central Terminal. It's clearly a very busy week for you, Klaus. We're so grateful you were able to join us today. Thank you for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
And that wraps it up for another Off Duty podcast. You can find more podcasts at wsj.com/podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at @WSJPodcast and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. And now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices. And as always, if you like what you heard, tell a friend.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.